Mom, let's go shopping today and I'll go to school tomorrow. First impressions are incredibly important.
Honey, you can make a wonderful first impression.
Hey, everybody, it's Again With This, a weekly look at one show on TV, episode by episode. Today's episode is Beverly Hills 90210, Season 1, Episode 1, with your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Who cares, Rod?
Oh, my God. All right, welcome. Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Tara and Dave.
Dave is also present, although he did not rewatch this episode. He may have a few things to throw in from time to time, but really the one that Dave will most need to participate on is when we get to the season 4, I believe, Christmas episode.
Yes.
The It's a Wonderful Life parody, maybe the worst thing that's ever happened.
Well, also the other one, not to let the cat out of the bag, but
right.
The other one is the If These Walls Could Talk episode.
Oh, yeah, the 60s flashback one and Brenda's last season.
That is terrible.
LaVoyne
is terrible.
It's all bad. There's
not
so much badness to come.
Not sure I could get past LaVoyne.
We'll see. So the idea of this podcast, as Dave said in the intro, is we're going through Beverly Hills 90210 episode by episode. As we mentioned on the big podcast, it is available to stream on Amazon Prime, on Hulu too, right?
Season 1 is
right,
on Hulu.
Season 1 is. And I think it's even on just on YouTube, like regular old YouTube. So if you want to watch along for season 1, please do. We would love it. Beyond there, we don't know. Maybe Amazon will put it back on. You can always rent it from Netflix. You can probably buy the DVDs very inexpensively. I certainly have. But once we get to the end of season 1, we'll figure out what to do next. I figure most of the people who are going to be listening to this have probably already seen these episodes at least once, if not many times, because it's been in syndication like since it's existed. Correct?
I think so.
Yeah.
And I certainly forget when I do a periodic rewatch of it, I forget a lot of stuff. So it's definitely worth going back for research purposes and not just because you like the show. How could you like the show?
Well, that brings up an interesting point. Why this show? It was my proposal, so I will say my reasons. And then Sarah, you can explain why you agreed, I guess. This is my favorite terrible show. It's not good. And when I did my Rags to Riches rewatch at late 2014 and early 2015, I think I thought it was more similar, and they do have a lot in common. I certainly did a lot of showdowns between the two of them, because 90210 borrows a lot of storylines from Rags to Riches. But
that's so sad.
I know. But it was like I was almost exactly the same age as the characters. In fact, I was their exact age when the show started. Then they lost a year and did their junior year twice. But this is like the show of my formative years. So even though I recognize from a critical standpoint that it's not good, I still love it so much. And that's why I'm excited to go back through it. Sarah?
I am doing this because I love Tara. And we did meet, quote unquote, on a board that was primarily devoted to 90210 watching.
That's true.
Back in the day. So, and I mean back in the day. Like the show was still on and Brenda had just left back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And when the show came on, I was a freshman in college. And so we were already pretty much hate watching it by then. But The Summer of Love was very enjoyable, whatever summer that was, 92.
I think that's right.
And there's just really a lot here, and I will never, ever, ever get sick of making fun of Dylan fucking McKay.
I swear to God, I thought you were going to say Andrea, and then I realized that sentence could end anyway. There's all the ways that sentence could end. Jim Walsh,
pretty much. Oh, Sydney, poor Sydney.
So you said who your historically least fave character is, Dylan.
Yeah, I mean, it varies. I have no use for Steve,
right?
But I don't think he never makes me that angry. He's just such a doofus.
Yeah,
so I think it's Dylan.
He's kind of good in this episode, actually, or at least not as hateful as some other people. Who's your historically favorite character?
Who's my historically favorite character? Brenda, I guess.
Yeah.
She's fantastic.
Yeah, I like Brenda too, although she's a bitch. But I like Kelly for a lot of the same reasons. And probably my least favorite character is... Oof. Donna's such a nothing, and she just keeps getting worse. I mean, especially as the show goes on, like past the Brenda years, which I don't really rewatch that much, it becomes so much the Donna stroke hour that it's really
when it's not being the Kelly stroke hour. True. And around about the I choose me externs. I mean, God knows when we're ever going to get to that. It'll be like 2018, but oh man.
Yeah.
Such a juicy storyline for hating on. It's really great.
Agree. And that's the storyline with Street Child. Oh, no, that's after Street Child Tara, right? I think. Or they're around the same time.
Yeah. I think, I mean, that both come out of the fact that she almost died in that party fire.
Right.
I think. So.
Yes. All right. Well, I'll be interested to see if these ratings change as we go into it. But now, let's just dive right in. The 2-hour series premiere event. Which in this format is not actually 2 hours because of, you know, commercials are cut out. But it begins with Brenda freaking out because she's going to this new school. They've just moved from Minneapolis. And it's very piloty in that a lot of the sets are not even right. They're not, they show Brandon in the kitchen and it's not the kitchen that we come to know.
It's not the outside of their house is not the same. Yeah. His car is not the same. Yeah. Very piloty. Mm-hmm. Establishment of stuff that we never see again.
And it starts out with them deciding to go to school in very twinsy matching outfits, which is also a bad call on everyone's part. But once they get to school, there's a version of the opening credits theme song that goes like 4 times through because the montage of all of the weirdnesses of Beverly Hills, of West Beverly High are so... They take so long to show, like kids walking in with briefcases, kids doing a dance routine on the lawn. This kid's got a portable phone, all these great cars. Like, we get it. And then they have to go in and meet the guidance counselor, who I think we also never see again. And that is clip number 3.
Swim team, sports editor of a school paper, all state cross country, and you still managed to keep a 3.8. Drama club, student council. Almost a straight-A student.
Yeah, well, I help her with her homework a little.
You're both used to doing well. You're both achievers. And I don't want to diminish your accomplishment, guys. But I don't want to kid you either. West Beverly High is tough.
So let me ask you this, Sarah. Is that something that ever came up again? I feel like they never even spend any time on their studies, except when Brenda is flunking out of science class in this episode.
I can't really remember. I mean, when it's like... designed to point up some issue of the week, maybe. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, like, and the SATs of course are an ongoing drama when Dylan won't take them and goes off to ride a stupid aunt's stupid horse and get Mrs. Robinson in the California countryside or whatever the fuck he's doing. Shut up, Anne. Yeah, they really don't focus a lot on academics. It's all Brandon being sportsy and Scoop Walsh. So
well, that's a good segue to our next clip, which is clip number 4.
Oh, God.
So, I want to write for the paper.
Can you write?
Well, I was the sports editor at my old school in Minneapolis.
Great. Which story would you like to cover? The toxic waste disposal in our chemistry classes or the girls' water polo match against Beverly High?
Well, we didn't have a girls' water polo team back home, so I'll take the new experience. What time's the game start?
You definitely failed my test.
No, I don't get it.
You see, whenever a guy wants to work on the school paper, I ask him, do you want to cover the girls' water polo match, or do you want to do the toxic waste story? Not one guy has ever wanted to do the toxic waste story. Why is that, Brandon?
Human nature?
No offense. But this is the top-ranked high school paper in the country, and I intend to keep it that way. So I suggest you put aside your dreams of editing the swimsuit issue of Sports Illustrated. We are talking long hours, major deadlines, and total commitment. Still interested?
Dave had a reaction to that, so I'm going to call on Dave.
I have a question.
Please.
High school newspaper national rankings? Not a thing.
Is it? I don't know. Nope. Is it, Sarah?
I don't think there are rankings.
No.
There's a society. They'll give you a like national merit equivalent just right. Pretty much for showing up.
Yeah.
There's whatever. No college rankings. There's nobody ranks newspapers. There's reputation, but there's not rankings.
Right. But that is such a great introduction to Andrea, and that she's such a pissy bitch.
Oh my God, I have many comments.
Please.
I recapped this for Television Without Pity many, many years ago. I found the file somehow. It is gigantic, and it is me going on many, many humorless, pissy rants, also usually about Andrea, whose name I spelled O-H-H-H-H-H-N-D-R-E-A.
Yeah.
Consistently throughout the story. And my response to this was, like, Andrea, it could be that he picked the water polo story because the toxic waste story sounds exactly like the kind of dog with fleas crap your advisor makes you run that nobody reads because it's boring. Maybe water polo was chosen because water polo is a sport. Could it be that you take your position as editor-in-chief of a high school paper an eensy bit too seriously, especially since you are only a junior or a sophomore, whatever fucking year you are, given that you're 33 years old? You shouldn't even be the editor-in-chief. I mean, here's the thing. She's the feminist character. I want to be on her side. She makes it really impossible.
Yeah. As does her giant blazer in the scene. Did you write about that in the recap? Sure. All of her outfits are horrible in this entire episode, but that one is maybe the worst.
I don't think I mentioned it vis-a-vis this scene, but I think I mentioned it and the fact that it was over a sweatshirt with the fake, like, Dicky collar.
Oh, yes! You're right.
Which, I owned one. Not better than anyone.
We all
except I'm
them.
Better than Andrea, because I didn't wear it with a pleated shorts suit. Why? Bad.
So we proceed from this disastrous first not meet, not cute, to the very unsanitary outdoor cafeteria, where basically we have to hear all about everyone's eating disorders, and then Dead Scott, not yet dead, gets his lunch tray biffed by football, and then everyone sees the banner for Marianne Moore's big party, including the tale, which reads, "No fresh man." So no fresh man is invited to this party. And then we also get the first meeting of Cindy and Kelly, and that is number 5.
Mom, this is Kelly. Kelly, this is my mom.
Hi, Kelly.
Hi. This is Donna and Kathy and Michelle.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Well, it's nice to meet you. You look like you're ready to have a real good time. When's your curfew?
Excuse me?
Guys, things are different in Beverly Hills. Parents don't care about their children at all, apparently.
Oh, the negotiation for this is so... I wish I'd asked for a sound drop of Brenda's bitchy, like, trying to get it to 12:30.
Yeah.
So rude.
Yeah.
Like, I would have been yanked out of the car. Like, how about your curfews now, bitch?
Yeah.
Wow. Poor Cindy.
And then we go to the party, and... Brandon meets up with Steve, and both of them are fashion horrors. Brandon is in head-to-toe denim, and Steve is in white, knee-length, like, chino shorts with Jerry Seinfeld toaster white sneakers and scrunch socks, if I recall correctly, and a white polo and a blazer. So, just to paint you a picture.
It's a lot of look.
It is a lot of look. But the girls are weirdly underdressed, too. I mean, I know it's only high school party, but, like, they're all in... weird, like they look like they just came out of a workout. Like there's a lot of knee-length leggings and like drop waist pastel dresses. They definitely glam it up as the series goes on. But we also, this is also where we get more confirmation that Kelly has just gotten back from having a nose job, which is weird because there's also all this stuff about how she was always the most beautiful girl in school. So how big was her nose? We never find out. And she has a brochure for her plastic surgeon at the party, which she pulls out and they all pour over while they're standing beside the pool nerdily. And Dead Scott shows up in a very sad tie because even though he's a fresh man, he and David have crashed. Sarah, your thoughts?
Yeah, I tend to just fast forward and or mute anything in the early going with David and Dead Scott because it's not funny. It's not even, like, aggressively bad enough to be interesting. It's just boring. Especially Dead Scott. I mean, you know, God bless this actor. He went into the Air Force. He, you know, served America and ran far away from acting, which was absolutely the right choice.
Yep.
I feel bad for him. But, oh, man. Like, if you're being acted off the screen by prepubescent David Austin Green. It's not good.
Yeah.
It's not a good look.
And what's weird is that both of them have a bigger part in this episode than Donna. Donna really is very recessive through most of season one, if I recall correctly.
Yeah.
Until we get to her learning disability, but that might not even be until season two.
No, I think by the time you get to the slumber party, she's kind of been pulled up into like the gang, capital T, capital G.
Right.
Watched that episode the other day. Love it.
That is a great one. I can't wait to get to that one too. So Brandon's wandering around the party and he runs into Leslie Bega, formerly of head of the class, and her crazy gigantic new lips that she clearly does not even know how to work yet because she's just duck facing all over town. And of course, she's the mysterious Marianne Moore, and they have an actual meet cute. Sorry, Andrea. And for some reason, Brandon like freaks out at her when he finds out that she's the hostess, which I've never have understood. Like, I don't get it. What do you think?
I don't get it. He's really like, I don't understand. Everything's so different here. Like, but they have to repeat a variation on that in almost every scene of this pilot, just to emphasize that we're not supposed to engage with the values of Beverly Hills and their parentless children or whatever.
Right.
But yeah, like I don't understand why he wigged out, and the property is gigantic. And then later on, they end up in the hot tub, which is like in the middle of a forest glade in another state. Apparently, he doesn't freak out about that.
Yes.
Well,
we'll get there.
Freaks out about something. We will get there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so,
that was weird.
Go
I was
ahead,
staring at his hair though. His like ducktail mullet in this entire episode is so amazing.
Yeah, they finally figure it out. It's sort of like Will in the first episode of Will and Grace, like, oh, this Canadian ape drape will not do. Let's take care of it. But anyway, then there's a
ape drape.
Well,
I just haven't heard that term in a while. Well done.
So then there's some endless car related hijinks because Steve gets way too drunk because he's still depressed about Kelly because they just broke up. And then David ends up driving his car, blah, blah, blah. It's boring. The next day, Brenda and Brandon are comparing notes on their way to school, which I guess means this was on a school night. And we get our first Brenda and Brandon twincest alert. And that's clip number 6.
Wish I met somebody at the party.
You will.
Oh, I don't know, Brenda. We're so different. I mean, she's so rich and we're so...
normal.
Yeah. How could I know if she's even serious? I mean, she probably talked to a million guys that night.
Are you kidding? She would be lucky to have a date with you.
You're just saying that because you're my sister and you have to say things like that.
I do not. I'm saying that objectively as a girl.
Your thoughts. Hey,
You don't have to say things like that about a sibling. You don't.
You don't have to, and you should not.
No, please don't. Especially not in close quarters like an Omni.
Yeah, and that's also earlier in the episode, he also he says something to her like, you're cute enough or something. It's like, no, okay, guys.
Yeah.
Nope. So then we're in class. Kelly is doing driver's license doctoring on Brenda's out-of-state license, which
with
I guess...
with a pencil.
Yeah. And it's paper, which I feel like were driver's licenses paper even then? Like, they would have at least been laminated. No? I didn't have one.
I don't remember. My permit, I think, was paper. But it's pencil. I don't understand. And also, isn't there a whole, like, ongoing thing for years about how Brenda can't drive? It sucks at it and keeps crashing?
Yes. She can't get her license because she keeps trying and failing. She's too scared. It's one of the many things that Brenda can't do, including also get a job.
And yeah, that's not even a it's not even a permit. I think it's like a full license.
Yeah.
Which pilot, whatever.
Right. So the point
it's
of this
not long for this world. No. It doesn't matter.
No. Well, yeah, right. So they
Kelly's isn't.
Yes. This is the setup that they're going to go out to a cool club, even though they all look way younger than whatever their actual ages were at the time. And that's when they have a run in. Right. Well, she's not invited. They have a run in with the bouncer, who is played by Jaimin Hansu, here credited just as Jaimin, no last name. And things do not go so well for Kelly. And that's
this is what they tell me to do with fake IDs.
You slime.
I feel like we should get a drop of that as well. But Brenda manages to get in before all of this happens. And then she meets Jason. And here is where I feel like I should turn things over to Sarah D. Bunting.
Okay. Well, thanks to Grease 2, please note, no other sentence will ever begin with this phrase, I had a huge crush on Maxwell Caulfield for many, many moons. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that if the watching the original pilot didn't kill it, rewatching it in 2005 did. This is absolutely the strangest, like, the character is a dick.
Yes.
The performance is extremely bizarre and directed extremely bizarrely. Even the set design of Jason's apartment is completely beyond, like, the bubble wall.
Yes.
The blocking, the mock turtlenecks, his couple friends who hate each other. Like, everything about the storyline is like, have you ever interacted with humans before?
Mm-hmm.
And also, how do you not know that she's underage? Well, we should hear the first clip, because it's very obvious from the jump.
That's number
she's
eight.
Not 20.
Are you in school?
Yes.
Well, where do you go?
Yes.
SC. What, UCLA?
Right.
Hey, that's where I went to law school.
Really? So you're a lawyer?
Yeah. Now tell me, do you live in a dorm or in a house?
A house.
Which one?
Which house?
Yeah, I know all the sororities there.
It's a new one. We just transferred from Minnesota.
State?
Yes.
But the whole house just transferred from Minnesota State to UCLA.
Something like that.
How weird.
But I guess I'll take it on face value.
It's weird, all right. This doesn't actually include the part where she agonizes for like a month over what drink to get and then orders the most like rookie girl drink thing, a banana daiquiri in a club.
Which the bartender delivers in 10 seconds. Like it would take that long just to put it in. You didn't have it made behind the counter.
Oh, God. Yeah.
But yeah, Jason is terrible and continues to get worse as the episode continues. But speaking of terrible, Brandon and Marianne are on their first date. He is, they take turns. I think she initially is driving and he's clinging onto her back on her motorcycle while this really dumb song plays. And that's clip number 9, just a little of it.
Wow.
Yeah, I assume that was
and plays and plays.
Yeah, this scene just goes on and on and on. It's like, anyway, I guess it's sublimated sex. But then they end up in the hot tub that Sarah mentioned, and
then you long for the halcyon days of the close-ups of the motorcycle tailpipe.
Yeah, because then this happens. Number 10.
Let's take off all our clothes.
Whoa, wait a sec. Wait a second.
What? What's wrong?
I don't know. I kind of feel like our roles got a little bit reversed there. I mean, aren't you supposed to hold out on me for a little bit?
Well, why wait? Nobody's stopping us.
What's the rush? I'm not going anywhere.
Is that a threat?
Sorry.
No, don't be. It's just I'm having a great time just being here with you. Is that weird?
No. It's just that most guys expect more from me, that's all.
Yeah, well, most guys want a lot of things they can't get.
Not in this neighborhood.
Wait a minute, didn't your mother teach you about playing hard to get?
Ugh, so gross.
Look, you watch these old teen dramas and sometimes the, like, BFD about sex, you can sort of like, you forget that at this time having sex could kill you.
Yeah,
like AIDS, HIV, it was a death sentence. It was on a manageable, like a more manageable disease like it is today. So in that way it's sort of interesting, but that's not really the filter. It's this like retrograde me, Brandon, you, Jane thing. And then he's using this weird little baby voice. It comes back later, but it's just so, ugh, I don't know. you can do better, Valentina from The Sopranos. And she did.
Yeah, it's really, we were talking about this on IM earlier this week, that like the, one of the many reasons that things are better for teenagers today than they were, oh God, 24 years ago, is that now even on a teen show, like, and, you know, the AIDS point is well taken, but like they, as you said, like on Find a Carter, people just fuck and it's fine. Like even on really wholesome shows on ABC Family, like even on The Fosters, like people can have sex and it's okay. Like it doesn't ruin anyone's life. Nobody gets guff about it, you know, for giving it up too easily or not playing hard to get because their mothers didn't teach them how. Like, it's really, it's, this is more than anything, even almost more than the outfits. I feel like this is the scene that really dates this episode.
And I think it was dated at the time.
I would like, love to just, believe that.
Just the phrasing. Yeah. I mean, I don't think the attitude is dated, but the phrasing, like, got to play a little hard to get, like, okay, Lawrence Welk. Thanks for the tip.
Yeah. And I don't want to say that, you know, gay men can't write good straight sex scenes, but maybe this is a thing where Darren Star was like, I don't know. I guess I saw this in a movie from the 50s. But anyway, it's gross. And then they talk about it a little bit more. And she says that her parents think that she's boring because they're whores, I guess. And they're never home, obviously, because it's Beverly Hills. And then number 11.
Come in.
No.
No.
Is that what I'm supposed to be doing?
Good for you.
Yeah.
Except inadvertent burn, but good one.
Mm-hmm. But then she makes a big scene because she was so impressed by their date and how he protected her virtue that she sends him roses in his Spanish class. And obviously the whole school finds out about it and he becomes like the big, oh, I'm getting ahead. We forgot the part where Brenda goes back to Jason's apartment and he tells her, I'd offer you a drink, but I'm all out of bananas. Which is really a rough line, but she brought it on herself. And then she tells him that she doesn't have a phone, which I would think was a terrible, terrible lie, except someone used it on Catfish like 6 episodes ago. And then she has to take a rickety old cab, weirdly, for no reason to get home. And then the cabbie's way too interested in her business, blah, blah, blah. And then she calls Kelly and a totally other Jackie comes out, but she's still kind of a mess. It's a different actress. And she's yelling. She yells at Kelly for the phone ringing at 6 in the morning, or what she calls the middle of the night because it wakes up whatever trick she has in her bedroom. Which is weird because in my notes I have Kelly doesn't have her own phone line. Like even teenagers that I knew in Niagara had their own phone lines at the time. So that's weird.
Yeah, I had my own. I don't know.
Yeah.
Because my parents were sick of that shit.
Right. Right.
Get the
exactly.
Neck, Jackie.
Not that anyone's calling you at 6 in the morning. I hope. But then, so then the flowers things happen and then Brandon's out running the track, which they very meanly put Jason Priestley between 2 average sized people. It makes him look even tinier. They're all in sweatsuits. They're in sweatshirts and sweatpants running.
I know.
Track.
It's like the scene from Grease. And then there's sawed off little Priestley in the middle there.
And I think the one guy on the left has basketball shoes on, which I noticed when I was clipping this. But anyway, play clip number 12.
Hey, are you the guy, Mary Young sent flowers to?
Yeah?
Hey, Robertson, this is the guy.
Oh, Marianne sent you flowers.
Well, I wouldn't exactly call them flowers.
Hey, look, man, I want to know what you did, man. You see, I happen to cultivate a very deep interest in the female species, so I want to know what you did, where you did it, how you did it, and how you got her to do it.
Look, Robinson, all I can say is that I did something with Marianne on Saturday that most guys probably couldn't handle.
Hey, what's that supposed to mean, man?
Butt stuff.
Use your imagination.
Butt stuff.
No. Ow. No way, man.
Yeah. I mean, I don't.
I mean, they are inferring that it's butt stuff. Am I mistaken?
No. That's what I have in my notes, too. Like, they way overreact to their assumption that Brandon ate her ass out or something. But, yeah, it's really not appropriate. And then it goes to the school DJ, who's, like, some guy that we barely see after this, because then David ends up taking over the job soon. But yeah, Brandon and Marianne end up in the Wild Thing report, which leads to Brandon getting punched in the gut by Marianne, which he totally deserves.
Oh, and also everyone at the entire school standing around in the outdoor spaces listening to it like the fucking opera scene in Shawshank Redemption. And excuse me, why are you putting your underage drinking joints on blast to the entire school? Mm-hmm. Do you think the principal's office doesn't have a like a PA thing, a speaker in it.
Yeah.
And stop saying wild thing. Oh God, it's so bad.
And like, it's not just wild thing. It's the wild thing. Wild thing every time.
Can you do that again?
Wild thing. Wild thing.
What's more?
Wild thing. Wild thing.
Okay. Thanks.
Meanwhile, in another plot line that no one cared about at any point, Steve is still driving around in his busted car, which he hasn't gotten fixed for some reason. And then Brenda goes out for dinner with Jason and Jason's dumb friends. Oh, shit. I skipped over Andrea's terrible burn. So then Andrea gets another stupid line after the wild thing happens. And that's number 14. Sorry.
Odd.
You know, for once I thought he was a nice guy. A guy with class, intelligence, sensitivity. But now I think you're just a gutless wimp who probably can't even write a good lead.
Oh! Sick burn!
Can't write a good lead.
How dare she?
Wow.
Yeah.
That's getting slapped with the glove of Andrea right there.
Yeah. Oh, man. And then Brenda goes out for dinner with Jason and Jason's dumb friends. And that is number 16.
You know, I heard that they discovered another universe after this one. Like, some billion light years away or something like that.
Who cares, Ron?
So that woman is our spirit animal. I don't think we ever find out what her name is, but she's the best.
Word, Mrs. Ron. You're the best. I will say that Brenda, finally, like, she's sort of a deer in the headlightsy about the Jason's. Like, what do you think of the wine? And she's like, I guess it's fine. Like, just say it's fine.
Yeah. He's not asking you to say if you notice what notes are in it. Like, who cares?
Like, it's a little woodsy, don't you find? Like, just a yes or no would do it there. But then she says her major is astronomy, which, like, talk about a panic fail.
Yeah.
And but then she has a really good cover that she's like, well, without a working knowledge of fourth dimensional geometry, I was like, finally, getting the knack.
Not bad.
Good girl. Means,
just say English if it ever comes up again. Everyone knows what that is. And also no one cares to hear what books you're reading.
Who cares, Ron?
Yeah, seriously. And then that ends with Jason dropping her off at some house next to a church or something, but he has a dire warning for her, and that is number 17.
About Friday. Plan on spending the night.
Oh, so now she's entered into a verbal contract. He is a lawyer, so I assume that
lawyer,
means
a I think lawyer. To say.
Yeah, God, Shannon Doherty has such a weird accent. Most words she's fine, but then that is one. And whenever she tries to say like couldn't or wouldn't, it's always like couldn't or wouldn't. It's awful to listen to. And the fact that she got to be a child actor and no one ever corrected her is kind of insane. But yeah, plan on spending the night. I guess now we know why Jason is only dating 16-year-olds, because they're the ones dumb enough to fall for that bullshit.
Wow.
Yeah. But meanwhile, Brandon has been sufficiently shamed by Andrea that he decides to go on the wild thing report to make a huge gesture and correct the record as to what he did with Marianne.
Again, using that baby voice. I don't know if we're hearing that in the clip. But he's
no,
like,
no, I just
feels really wrong what I did. Like, okay.
Yeah. No, I am
baby.
I only clipped the wild thing guy. And that's number 18.
Hold on. Before you say another word, remember, we are regulated by both the FCC and Mr. Sabitsky, our club sponsor.
Spinoff for Mr. Sabitsky, please. That's the only reason I clipped that. It's such an unnecessary
Meanwhile,
detail.
They're willing to devote an entire segment to how drizank Steve got the other night. And it's like the whatever waste case bulletin or remember much, Steve? Like, what are you... Are you kidding? Are you trying to get a curfew for the whole zip code? What are you doing?
So he does this whole thing and the wild thing guy is totally unimpressed that Brandon has thrown cold water on everyone's tiny high school boners.
And if I may interrupt for a moment.
Please.
This is a spot where a visual is most excellent because there is an extra filing actual record. Like
with
LPs.
The sunglasses on inside.
Yeah, which by the time the wild thing guy is staring at him like, really? That guy has taken his sunglasses off to roll his eyes at Brandon in the background, and then he puts them back on. I encourage you to find this clip, and I will try to actually like clip it myself and put it in the show notes somewhere. It's so good.
Yeah.
Thanks, extra.
Yeah, good work. So then Marianne Moore in her extremely 90s outfit of very loose fitting sheer dress over spandex stuff and barely tied up docks, finds Brandon.
And Walkman headphones.
Oh, yes, and Walkman headphones.
Owned finds this Brandon. This entire ensemble.
Mm-hmm. Finds him and is basically like, well, we're cool now. I'll call you. We never see her again, ever, not one time. And then we cut back to Brenda, whose grades are already slipping, even though she's been out with Jason two times. She has to really buckle down and figure out what she's going to do. And then we get Brandon trying to win Andrea back over because he, you know, wants to make sure that she thinks he's a good guy because, like all not good guys, this is the only thing that's important to him. And that's when we find out Andrea's tragic secret. She lives in the valley. Excuse me. So he follows her home on the bus because he has so many things he needs to mansplain to her.
And there's like action chase music and she's like doing her Spanish homework on the bus and he's like dun 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 like Brandon Impossible over there.
Yeah. And for an editor who thinks so highly of herself, she really should copy edit herself when she says things like so fast my head will spin cliche and it'll mess me up bad if he rats her out, and of course he won't because he's a good guy, just ask him. And then we get the climactic end of Brenda's relationship with Jason, starting with clip number 20.
Jason, this place is really nice.
For the money it's costing, it should be.
Great, great start.
Classy with a capital K. Thank you.
I thought you were making lawyer money. Any dinner should be within your grasp, Jason. But then she's starting to really have feelings for him, so she comes clean and tells him that she's actually in high school, and he says, clip 21.
I should sue your parents. Yes.
Sarah, over to you!
This is just one of the many... I mean, earlier you had Kelly being like, Brenda, if he really loves you, it shouldn't matter how old you are. And he's like, if he really loves her, mm-hmm. they've been on two dates.
Yeah, this is date number three.
Gross.
If you count the meeting in the club as date number one, which barely.
And this is following the scene of their like initial making out at Bubble Wall Estates, where he had this really weird blocking where he slid his arms like up the sides of her body into her armpits, like he was about to pick up a baby and I guess make out with it.
He did. Yeah.
And he's way too, like, he's just way taller than Shannon Doherty. It really didn't work. But then his delivery of that line kind of makes up for everything. Mm-hmm. That he's like, I should sue your parents. And then there's this really long pause. And then he's like, yes.
Yes, he agrees with himself. That's a great idea.
Spoiler, he does not sue her parents. And isn't God. Jim Walsh also a lawyer?
No, he's like an accountant or something, or business something.
Oh, okay.
Business.
I thought he was a tax lawyer. Anyway, I can't stop saying lawyer.
I know. But this is also where we see our first ever Brenda stomp as he drops her off after berating her some more and she has to stomp off to the front door. And then she tearfully semi-confesses to Cindy that something bad happened and Cindy doesn't really press for details, which is weird, but whatever. And she has so many dangling doodads on her dress that you don't notice when she's sitting at the table at the expensive restaurant. This is the Jim Walsh is in his third scene of the whole episode. He's hardly in it, and he only shows up here to get jammed out of the conversation between Brenda and Cindy because Jim Walsh is inconsequential. And then we close up with a classic, terrible season one, don't know how to end it final scene, and that is number 22.
Brandon, are we going to make it here?
Well, the houses are bigger, the weather is warmer, and tan lines are outstanding, but it doesn't mean they've cracked the meaning of life. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know.
No.
So stupid. That's like how, like, I would have ended
I actually
a scene
don't know
at
what
time.
You mean. Yeah. Starting with the tan lines comment. Tan lines, not desirable.
Also,
that's
starting with houses are bigger here? Nope. Guarantee you your house in Minnesota was much bigger than the one you have in Beverly Hills.
True. Yeah, they haven't even been over to anyone else's house yet. Well, other than Marianne's, I guess. But yeah, that's our episode. So final thoughts on the proceedings.
I would also like to shout out the fact that it being season one, there is a much more like very special PSA, the more you know,
for
flavor
sure. Yes.
Going on. This principle, I think, is never to be seen again.
I think that's right.
But he calls her into his office at some point when her chemistry grade has plummeted in 2 days somehow. Mm-hmm. And it's like, there's something going on with you, Brenda, and I'm going to make damn sure you're talking to someone about it. Like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'll go. Why don't I just go to the school counselor that you apparently couldn't afford
right
to hire for the day? And then there's that weird subplot with him, like, seeing the Spanish teacher. Mm-hmm. Dancing, and the fact that I actually had two full graphs on this in my recap about how, like, everybody who's in Spanish 2 is either too advanced for it or has obviously never been to a Spanish class in their lives before. Like,
or eaten hola at a Mexican restaurant, even. Like, it's L.A. You would have, like, from osmosis, you would have picked up some Spanish just by living there.
Yeah, come on.
From your maids, if nothing else. This is Beverly Hills.
Oh, and, yeah, I think we're in for a couple of Cindy's white guilt episodes. Mm-hmm. So that'll be interesting, examining the class struggle in Beverly Hills as of 1989. yeah, this is really painful, but there are some howlers in there that totally make it worth it. And Jason is just so bizarre. Like, everything about it is bizarre.
Yep. So let's each name the episode MVP and LVP.
MVPs.
Sarah, your most valuable player for the episode.
Oh, gosh. My most valuable player. I got to go with Mrs. Ron.
Nice.
You?
Yeah, I like Mrs. Ron, too. Honorable mention to Steve. For no other reason than if you could play clip 15 real quick. This is after Steve's been told by David that David drove his car and maybe wrecked his speakers as well because he was blasting the music too loud. I have to give Ian Ziering credit. That was some pretty good hysterical laughter that I actually believed was real. We were watching a 30 Rock recently where Liz was supposed to be laughing and her fake laugh is terrible by comparison. But for me, the MVP has got to be Jason. He's such a shithead, and he makes the episode A plot so much more interesting and fun with his terribleness.
He really does.
Least valuable player, Sam.
Gosh. Well, this is a tough one. David and Dead Scott as a pair, as a like C plot comedic relief pair. They're neither. I would nominate them, mm-hmm. but they weren't on screen that much for me.
Right.
Because I was consistently fast forwarding through their shit. So I am going to go with, this is a tough one. This is very tough. I'm going to go with whoever decided that Cindy should not be the person she was the very first time we see her. When Brandon's like, where's the toaster? She throws entire box of kitchenware on the floor.
It's clip
and
number two.
Wordlessly is like, find it yourself, dickhead.
So she spends an hour in front of the mirror, and now she's got to go change her clothes. Where's the toaster?
Like, she slings it. It's like she's curling. Yeah. It is great. So whoever decided that Carol Potter should thereafter be confined to having a perm that looked like a proscenium arch, looking worried, and entering rooms wearing a hideous apron, pleated mom khakis, and carrying a Pyrex casserole. Mm-hmm. Bad call, because I really feel like Carol Potter, and she knew it too, she's been quoted about it, I really feel like she had it in her to be snarky mom, and maybe we'll still see that in some parody somewhere.
I hope so. LVP is Brandon, protector of virtue, tied with Andrea, protector of virtue from virtue protector. Both of them are real shitheads, but it does give you a good template of what their relationship is going to be like for the entire rest of the season.
I can't wait, personally, until we hear the undercover on the cafeteria story quote. It's going to be great.
Yes. Well, that's it. Thank you for joining us. In the next episode, Brandon meets a surf Betty who has problems. And also Dylan.
Someone else comes to town.
Yeah, he managed to overall avoid.
buttoned.
Oh my God, so many sleeveless Baja things. So thank you for listening. Join us next time. And take us out, Dave.
And this is your Flash the Cash DJ, and you're listening to KWBH. See ya!